You know that I'm not telling the truth, but what's in the box? Next on Comic Book Exchange.
This is Book Circle Online, featuring in-depth discussion, insight, news, and commentary on all the world's leading book titles and their authors. And now, Book Circle Online.
Hey guys, I'm Lucretia Lyon, as you know if you've ever watched this show before, and we are the Comic Book Exchange. I am filling in for Frank, and this will probably be the last time since I intro'd that way. But I am not here by myself. I have my trusty colleague.
Hello, I am Lex Michael. I am all over social media at the Lex Michael, and physically I am all over this chair.
Yes, and you guys know I am Lucretia Lyon, so you can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one. And thank you, Twitter, for acknowledging that, because I've got that fancy little blue check mark.
That's right. You got, I think since the last time we convened here, you got that sweet, sweet blue verification check mark. Congratulations. You're a real live person now.
I know. I feel special.
Yes. Yeah. I now defer to you on all matters of importance, because you do quantifiably count more than I do.
According to the internet.
Yes.
But on a happier note, or happy in the end, but initially our news is Marvel and DC crossed over for the first time in 13 years to combat trolls. So the ladies of Marvel Comics took a picture on the internet enjoying a milkshake after work, which seemingly seems very innocent.
That's right. I remember. Yeah. So I didn't. You're going to have to tell me the story, because I didn't actually see this entire story, but I saw this photo of them drinking these milkshakes. And then I saw that somehow, without having read into any of the specifics, some people really took issue with this innocent, innocuous photo of these ladies enjoying some milkshakes. What happened here?
I don't know. You know, there's some people whose parents obviously didn't love them, or I don't really know what was going on, but, you know, DC Comics stepped in solidarity with their Marvel ladies and started the hashtag Make Mine Milkshake.
Yes.
Yeah, so they showed their support, which is interesting. I didn't realize they hadn't crossed over really doing any support after a comment from 13 years ago on Marvel's side from Joe Quesada, who likened DC to a porn star who couldn't get it up.
Oh, dear.
I of course, had to find out more when I was like, that long, huh?
That is a far cry from the days where Stan Lee would throw shade by winkingly calling them the distinguished competition. Yeah. I feel like flaccid porn star is maybe a step or two down.
A little darker, or, you know, better than, say, Wade Wilson and, you know, some of the character nods.
So what was the issue that people had, or the issue that, obviously, if anyone was taking an issue with these ladies enjoying what looked like very tasty milkshakes, obviously, if you're angry about that, you probably have a far bigger issue than whatever you think your issue is in the moment. But, like, do you know what people were saying that was so that prompted this response?
Well, most of the comments had been deleted by the time a lot of this was hitting, but it was just basically people trolling them, like saying, you know, how dare, you know, like, oh, they're disgusting and all this. I'm like, really? These lovely ladies of Marvel?
It's basically bald-faced women bashing, essentially?
Yeah. You know, I always heard that your milkshake brings all the boys to the yard.
Yeah. But they're all trolls.
Yeah. I was like, so they're not really boys.
But we've talked about this on a number of different shows. I think we've maybe addressed it here. And if not, certainly it comes up on a number of the other shows, because we do many after shows at AfterBuzz. And there are always comment sections under these videos. And for the most part, actually, I think I've gotten pretty lucky, in as much as a lot of the people that I see participating in these discussions are they're fans, and they're there to try and have a good time, and they're there to try and share in their enjoyment for whether it's a show or a movie or whatever it happens to be. And then, of course, occasionally, because it's the internet, you get somebody who seems like they're showing up to the party to be nasty for the sake of nasty. And it's like what you were saying, I think, half facetiously a minute ago about how, like, it's these people maybe were not hugged enough in their youth. And that's why it's great to see that Marvel and DC, because there are elements of certainly comic book fandom where you see these like weird pockets of toxicity. It's very nice to see them essentially taking a step towards letting their fans know, like, we don't want that. Like, that's not what this is about. This is supposed to be fun. This is supposed to be inclusive. And then, of course, on an individual level, like you were saying, I feel like you almost, it doesn't make it okay, but then there's a part of me that almost feels bad for people who troll super aggressively, because that's not, I could be wrong, but to look at it, that seems like not something a happy, fulfilled person does.
No.
So then it's like, how do we combat it effectively, when I wonder how much of the troll behavior is rooted in some anger or sadness that needs to be tackled on an individual level?
Well, I'm of the old school, and like my heroes Jay and Silent Bob did, when they combated internet trolls in the great cinematic feat that was Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, they just found out where they all lived and kicked their asses.
So your remedy would be for Marvel and DC, like maybe for Joe Quesada and like Jeff Johns, to just get a list to like dox all these people and go around the country house to house and just pull like assault them physically.
Are you Magnolia fan?
Jeff Johns, if you are listening, you take a break from helping craft some of these fine upcoming DC films. You get the studio to back you, fly you around the country, and you just beat on these trolls for a little bit.
I think that would be the best solution. But, you know, not all news in comics is upsetting. We have a lot of good casting news coming to DC on TV. Like, there was, like, a big string of it.
Yeah, we got in, within the span of, what, 3 days, we got a whole slew of announcements across all of these different shows.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is it was literally for all of them. Some of the major ones were Legends of Tomorrow, which is our favorite. Watch us on AfterBuzz TV, guys, when the show comes back. Thank you. Jess McCallum from Mistresses, which I admittedly watched, and she was my favorite character, will be joining as a formidable opponent, they're saying. You know, she's apparently, I'm thinking, going to be in Rip's crew of Time Masters kind of stopping them.
So is this the one? I read there was a character, and because there were a few announcements in a really short window, I think there are a couple of them that are now blending together in my head, but this is the character, right, that is associated with this new League of Time Masters that Rip's putting together. But if I'm not mistaken, is this not the character that is not based on a pre-existing character from the comics, but in fact is an original creation for the show? Okay.
Yes, and then speaking of characters from the comics, Neil McDonough, who I love, has been upgraded to series regular. He will still be a villain because there is a god.
On Legends of Tomorrow, we didn't dispatch him in any definitive way, even though we see his end on season 4 of Arrow, because we're jumping around the timeline. We can pull him out of the timeline whenever we want and put him back at the end of the season. I like that apparently they're talking about how whereas in season 2 of Legends, he was certainly dangerous and he was certainly not a very nice guy, but there was a lightness to him. There was a jokiness to him. You put him with Malcolm Merlin and there are any number of comedic scenarios that come up when you put the two of them together. But I like that apparently the intention is now to take this character to a more dark, formidable place and really dig into what makes him dangerous in a way that we haven't seen since season 4 of Arrow. And I would argue that in season 4 of Arrow, it was not consistent in that way. I think he went back and forth a lot between being the lighter version of the character we saw on Legends of Tomorrow and also something a little more dark, a little more dangerous. So leaning into that is an exciting idea.
And that's the thing, is Neil McDonough pulls off both so well. And I know I loved him on Desperate Housewives, where he would have these lighthearted moments, like doing this battle of the bands with the other dads on the street or whatever. And then you would have, I mean, his whole character arc, and won't spoil anything, was super dark. And then you have him on Justified,
I have just recently been watching Justified, finally, after you and another good friend of mine spent literally years recommending it aggressively to me. And yes, Neil McDonough has this arc in season 3 where he's playing a villain, and it's a very similar performance to his performance as Damian Dark, obviously sans magical powers. But in lieu of magical powers, you have this increasing level of drug-fueled mania that he descends further and further into over the course of the season. It's actually pretty terrifying. Damian Dark in the midst of drug-fueled magical mania would be something that I would not want to tangle with personally. I think even as a viewer, secure in the confines of my apartment, nestled in my couch under some blankets, it may just be too upsetting.
Well, some things that aren't upsetting is Vixen's getting a formidable opponent in Legends of Tomorrow. Tracy Ipecor, who from Quantico, has been cast as Kuwasa.
And the way I'm seeing this being written up makes it sound as if this is going to be one of the primary antagonists of the season. It makes it sound a little bit like you're getting a two-hander between this character and Damian Dark as far as your primary antagonist.
Well, and I think, too, with Legends of Tomorrow, the heroes are such a big cast. It's easy to have more than one villain, and kind of makes sense, because Damian Dark would be Sarah's main villain, because he killed Laurel, her sister, and then well, spoiler alert for those of you who aren't caught up, but yeah, and then now we have Vixen, who I'm glad is still in the fold, because I was curious as to if they were going to keep her around, but I liked Maisie Richardson's performance, and that character fit more than, say, Kendra before her, which is unfortunate, because the actress was really great, just... The hot girl story just never really took off.
No. I do like, though, that we are keeping Vixen around. I thought she brought a lot. She and Nate, being new additions to the cast last year, I thought both brought a lot to the table. Three lots. That's a lot of lots.
Yeah. A lot, as in Legends of Tomorrow. that was bad.
And then Lex quit. Yeah, but I'm glad that they're keeping her around as well. And to give her a one-to-one antagonist in a way that, of course, we haven't seen for this character in live action before, I think is a great way to start to peel back some of the layers of her character, really explore not just her personal history, but also maybe hopefully dig a little bit deeper into the mythology of Vixen's power set.
Because Vixen is a really interesting character, and they explored her origins in a cartoon on CWC, but not really even in... Arrow, which we had a different version of Vixen, and then on Legends of Tomorrow, we're not really getting a lot into our story, but I feel like with this announcement, we will.
Yeah, and I'm very much looking forward to that. I think, as I said, I think that character brought a lot to the table, and I'd like to see her given even more to play with this time around.
Yeah, and speaking of things that we always hope, or at least me, but I want to preface that I did not ask this at Comic-Con because I didn't get to talk to Mark Guggenheim, but somebody did ask about Constantine joining the Legends of Tomorrow.
I'm supposed to drink now.
Yes, if you do play the drinking game at home, that's one, guys. But unfortunately, Matt Ryan has been too busy, according to Mark, because they've tried to work him into the fold.
It seems like, again, and we've talked about it on this show before on a number of the CWDC after shows, it seems very much like they're keeping him in-house on purpose, even if it's only to lend his voice to animated projects like Justice League Dark. And I think, obviously, his Constantine show was short-lived, but I think we proved definitively, like, that's the guy. If you can get that guy to come play Constantine, you wait if you have to, and you get him to come play Constantine. The fact that I'm sure they keep getting questions from people about, well, when are you bringing Matt Ryan back as Constantine on one of these shows? Wouldn't he make a great fit for a member of the Legends of Tomorrow?
That's exactly my questioning.
I have to assume that they're getting this particular type of question from a lot of fans, so it must be something they're considering. And if all that's keeping it from happening is scheduling, then it is really just a matter of time.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, you know, they told me it's a possibility.
Even if, like, even if we only get him back for a one-off here or there, it would make so much sense to me, because there are so many ways, especially since now, over the last year or two on these shows, we really are playing with, straight-up magic. Not just metahuman powers, but actual magic, capital M magic.
Yeah, because with Vixen and with Damian Dark, and Malcolm Merlyn, to an extent, was the magician, and there was all this, you know, with the Ra's al Ghul. There are so many things that tie him in. It's just putting him in there.
And with the exception of Vixen, not too many heroic characters across these shows whose skill set is magic based. Yeah. I feel like you need a Constantine to be a force for good that is every bit as well versed in the mystic arts as somebody like, say, a Damian Dark.
Well, and two, Constantine is the one that made Sarah whole again. So how interesting would it be for him to turn up on Legends versus Arrow?
That's right. Like, I forget too, because it was just one episode a couple of years ago now. But yeah, Constantine was actually very pivotal in the resurrection of Sarah Lance to begin with. So yeah, why not take that little thread and continue to follow it.
Yeah, because they're both bisexual. You know, Sarah on the show and Constantine in the comics, and I'm like, that's where my brain immediately goes.
I honestly don't need anything from that episode. Like, if you gotta wait till a slightly inconvenient spot in your shooting schedule just for Matt Ryan's availability to open up, and you need to, I don't know, we spent all of our budget having them fight dinosaurs for three straight weeks.
Which is okay.
Just give me a bottle episode of John Constantine and Sarah Lance at a bar. Just for 40 minutes, and they're just hitting on everybody.
Yeah.
That's all. I'm not joking at all. That's all I need. I think it would be one of the greatest hours of television of that, or maybe any year.
And it has to be set in the 80s and in England. Very punk rock.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it can be.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm thinking like a very, like, a modern, not scuzzy at all, like, you can't smoke in here type of place. Yeah. But no, of course, you've got a time machine. Why would they go to a place like that when they could go to, like, 1980s, like, the most grungy, seedy, dirty punk bar?
Or CBGB in New York, like, circa 1983. Like, guys, this is free. Legend of Tomorrow Hours. You
Guggenheim, come on.
Come on.
You know you want this as bad as we want this.
Yeah, but speaking of things we've always wanted, Hartley Sawyer has joined The Flash as Elongated Man.
Maybe the third most popular stretchy character in comics? Because, right, you've got Mr. Fantastic is, I would say, probably the most popular stretchy guy.
And then Plastic Man,
who's, not for nothing, has one of the greatest names in comics. Plastic Man's name is Eels O'Brien. I don't, with the exception of Blackagar Boltagon, I don't know how many names in comics are greater than that one.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is, like, I like that it's Elongated Man because we'd kind of been hinted at that before with The Flash, but could I have Goggins as Plastic Man in this universe as well?
Goggins, though, and this was another bit of news that came out of Comic-Con. Of course, now we're recording a little bit after the fact so people know. But now Goggins is in Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yes.
Not for nothing. That cast is bonkers. Yeah. Like, I tweeted out after they announced Michelle Pfeiffer as Janet Van Dyne. I went to IMDb and I was like, what has she worked with what has she worked on with Douglas before? Nothing.
What? They've never worked together?
If you do that search where you can search two names together on IMDb, you're going to get a handful of TV award specials and Ant-Man and the Wasp. It is bizarre to me. What a life where Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer, the first time they will have appeared in a movie together, is the sequel to Ant-Man. And in a cast that features not only, of course, Paul Rudd returning, Evangeline Lilly returning, Michael Peña, but also Lawrence Fishburne is in this movie. He's playing Goliath. That's what a world we live in where Lawrence Fishburne is playing Goliath.
And then Walton Goggins is finally in a superhero property.
Yes, and it sounds like, I forget the name of his character, which I'm sure was part of the announcement, but it sounds like his character has stepped in to run Cross Industries after Darren Cross was... killed, but, like, I'm still not totally clear on what happened to Yellow Jacket. He, like, parts of him shrank, and I'm sure, like, he's maybe in the quantum realm now, or maybe he just poofed and no longer exists. But somebody has to run that company in either case, and apparently that man is Walton Goggins.
I know, and he is one of my favorite actors, and to be in that movie with Paul Rudd, who I still think is, even though his own son did not care that he was playing a superhero, I did. But yeah, speaking of comic books, one last bit of casting news, and this is really great news because I'm a big fan of Kathleen Gaddy. She's on General Hospital. She's been in the studio numerous times. A great friend of mine will be returning to Arrow. She was Raza the Maid in the pilot. And when I talked to her in here, she was honestly upset because the character was supposed to be a bigger part and they just really couldn't fit her in the rest of season one. So with that in mind, they wanted to bring her back because she's a phenomenal character actress. She's Hungarian, but from Canada originally. And it'll be really interesting to see because her character's kind of taken a dark turn on General Hospital and she is such a good bad guy. But I feel that what Guggenheim said, I think she'll be a good guy.
But wouldn't it be amazing if she shows up in season six and she's got a vendetta, essentially, because the Queen family just, like, forgot about her and dropped her somewhere. And Oliver's like, we had a maid?
Guggenheim even joked that she was the big bad, and he's like, no, she'll be helping with William. And it's like, well, either one of those is a big spoiler, whichever one is true.
Right. Well, we do know that William is the only other character we know for sure survived the season 5 finale of Arrow. But that, I mean, that's awesome. It's cool that they're willing to reach all the way back to the pilot for a character that I think, you know, you'd be forgiven for not necessarily remembering if she was essentially not, you know, not let go, but essentially not given more to do after that first episode. But it is now thinking back to the first, especially the first half of the first season of Arrow, the number of characters or plot threads that I assumed were going to be more important that ended up not going in. Like, do you remember Walter Steele?
Yeah.
Like, they really tried to make him. And they really tried to make Walter Steele happen for a while. And eventually were like, well, he doesn't really have anything to do. We like Colin Salmon. Who doesn't like Colin Salmon? But, like, this character has nothing really to do. What's he going to do against Deathstroke?
Yeah. But still, it was like, oh, he was their father figure. Oh, well, he's gone.
Right? And it's like, you'd think that he'd maybe call after Moira was killed, but no.
I think they did make mention that he did call after Moira was killed. I think Thea made an offhand comment.
Once or twice, I feel like they name-checked him. Yeah. But it's like, I thought y'all were close.
Yeah.
Not even a Skype call? Nothing? Okay. But so it's cool to see that they're going back even further than where we last left Walter Steele and bringing characters back. Because why not? That bench is so, so crazy deep at this point. You don't even have to go outside that talent pool too often if you don't want to.
Yeah, but Colin Donnell, they'll never get him back. I don't know why. You know, he's too pretty.
Too pretty. Too pretty for this or any world.
I know. It's a shame. Bad. He's a doctor in Chicago.
That's right, but they did. Yeah. There was some reference to that
in the 100th episode.
It was like, oh, Tommy's.
Malcolm mentions it.
Yeah, he's like Tommy's. I forget the term. He's like a medic in Chicago, and I was like, oh, it's a joke about how he's not on the show anymore.
Yeah,
cute.
Speaking of things that are cute, I did get to go to San Diego Comic-Con, and before I tease up this psych video, I just have to say that for all of you that were not in Hall H for the Supernatural panel, please call AfterBuzz and, you know, just talk about it with me. I really do feel bad for you. I'm sure they're, you know, that you guys really need some support, because it really was one of the greatest things in my life.
Was this the panel that Kansas opened?
Yes.
Okay.
And I filmed the whole Kansas opening.
I remember you telling me about this, and I was going like, well, of course Lucretia's going to go to the Supernatural panel. That's not even newsworthy. Of course, if Lucretia can be there, that's where she's going to be. But you told me after the fact that, like, oh yeah, we didn't know that this was happening, and all of a sudden it's like, ladies and gentlemen, Kansas. And Kansas comes out and plays, what, a couple of songs?
Well, no, they actually just played Wayward Son, which is the unofficial theme of Supernatural, because it really embodies the show. And then, you know, it's very classic rock influenced. And they basically just, the lights went out. They played this cute little video that Jensen and Jared had made as Dean and Sam about going to Comic-Con. And then, boom, Kansas just burst out Wayward Son. And apparently, Jared, Jensen, and Misha Collins were all in the back, because Jensen's like, we have to be in the audience for Kansas. Let me do it in his voice. We have to be in the audience for Kansas.
Is that what he sounds like?
He has a very gruff voice. You've seen Under the Red Hood.
Yes, okay, that's right. He was like, because, look, full disclosure, I am one of the only people left who has never seen an episode of Supernatural, but Jensen was Red Hood at one point.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's something you would recognize him from. And My Bloody Valentine, if you've ever seen the newer 3D version.
I have some vague... Did I see it, or did I see a trailer and dream that I saw the entire movie? I have, like,
it's
really vague,
film.
Hazy recollections of the new My Bloody Valentine, but not vivid enough that I believe I actually saw the movie.
Yeah, it was in 3D. Huh. It's worth it.
All right.
It's on my Amazon Prime.
Good to know. Put that on a list.
But and it was a surprise that Misha was there. So, spoiler alert, guys, Castiel is not dead. No matter how many times you kill the three main guys on Supernatural, at least, they always come back.
What season are we in?
13.
70? Okay.
Yeah.
13. That's crazy. I mean, like, again, I've never seen an episode, and the longer the show goes, the less likely it becomes that I'm going to start, because I feel like I could start now.
It's all on Netflix, buddy.
But I could start tonight when I go home, and I could do literally nothing else for months, and I would not be done with the show.
But your life would be better for it.
Would it? I mean, you may in fact be right, but how will I know if I'm never able to live my life again because I'm spending all of my time watching Supernatural?
Well, you know what? That's what I do, man. I come here and I watch Supernatural.
This is the big existential quandary. It's like to live or to watch Supernatural. And if you're not watching Supernatural, are you really living at all?
Yeah.
I'll get back to you.
But speaking of another show that if you didn't watch, you weren't really living. You know, and I really wish Frank was here because we share a love of Psych. But
another show that I've not seen. Though this was the show, didn't they do on Psych? They did it at one point, a Twin Peaks tribute episode.
Mm-hmm.
That was when I went, like, I was interested in a general sense in the show just based on the concept. But when I saw that they did a full hour Twin Peaks tribute episode, I was like, oh, this probably is for me.
Yeah, like Sherilyn Finn was great in that episode. I love her.
She's really good.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of references to the Log Lady and things like that. I mean, if you love Twin Peaks, I just can't believe you've never seen that episode.
I've never seen that episode.
It's wonderful. Yeah.
But they're coming back, right? And they're doing essentially a reunion in the form of a movie.
Yes. Yeah. Psych the movie will be a Christmas movie. And so they've not teased a lot about the plot or anything like that. And they were pretty vague, but I did get some funny answers about one of the gags in the show is hidden pineapples in every episode. And they would play a game on USA about if you find the pineapple, you could win stuff and things like that, just because they would randomly put them in there.
Sure.
So just a string of questions in the interviews. We'll play mine with James Rodet right now.
There's more Gus, and there's more Gus stuff that Gus likes.
All right, well, that sounds really interesting. And I'm just so happy to have Psych back. I'm a fellow Psych guy myself. And how does it feel that we love you guys so much that we don't end up not having more?
Yeah, because they call the fans psychos. So, I mean, we love the show. It's very similar to Chuck in the fact that it's like a happy show. Like an hour-long comedy. Yeah.
I keep using the metaphor of, like, the end of a concert. Yeah. And everybody's screaming for an encore, and the band comes out, and they give you their encore, and you say goodbye, and people say, no, no, let's do one more song, and the lights come off. And everybody knows that means the show's over, and they leave. Not Psychos. Psychos refuse to let the lights come back. That's the reason we're here. It's the reason we keep coming back as many times as they'll let us, because we have the most incredible fans who have put us on their shoulders and made us serve for years and years. And I mean, obviously we're thankful and grateful, but I also don't know how to explain it.
Speaking of the Psychos love, we love all the hidden pineapples. I've seen Corbin's got their hat on, Steve Franks has his socks. Do you have any hidden pineapples?
Yes. Not suitable for this particular interview.
Oh, okay. Well, not safe for work.
Yeah. There you go. I can't sit. I'll put it that way.
Seems pretty earnest about it, too.
I know, he's very proud. We'll go to the one where Dulé, we get kind of dirty because Maggie Lawson kind of teased that he just, everything he says sounds dirty. Huh. But he's the almost co-lead. I mean, Psych is Sean, but let's face it, Gus was just as important. He was a straight man. That's who I named my car after, his car. Yeah.
Huh.
The return of Psych. How does it feel to be back?
Oh, it feels great.
And I just interviewed Maggie, and she told me, because I'm curious about the pineapples. I see Corbin's got one on his hat. She said you might know about some secret pineapples, and it sounded kind of dirty.
I mean, you know, me and Maggie had this thing where we always would, like, say things that shouldn't sound dirty, but somehow do sound dirty. You know what I mean? But about me, secret pineapples in terms of
here?
Yeah, I think if you see Steve Franks, you can check out his socks. There's some secret pineapples on Steve on the bod of Steve Franks. But don't look too high. You got to look low.
Oh.
You see what I'm saying?
See that? Then that's also a little bit dirty, huh?
You see what I'm saying? You got to look low. Look for the low-hanging fruit.
I get it.
Oh, this is fun.
This is fun.
One last thing. And I'm very genuine about it. Where yes. They take 10-second snaps with just a button. Like, I'm walking around with sunglasses.
Yeah, Snapchat gave me those glasses to go around Comic-Con with them.
It's not sunny inside, but it's sunny outside. What's going on, y'all? Psych, the movie's coming after you real quick. But that's how we gonna do it.
So wait, is there somewhere on someone's Snapchat? Snapchat's the one that's... I'm an old man when it comes to this stuff. Snapchat's the one that's super temporary, right?
Yeah, and I was able to, like, save them because on the glasses, they go to your memory, so they're kind of automatically save, and then you can choose which ones you put in, which is much better.
Okay, because I was going to say, so somewhere, is there the POV footage of Dule Hill getting right up in your face, plugging the... the Psych reunion movie?
Yes, I will put that online later as well.
I want to see it. And also, too, like, not for nothing, I'm a fan of Dule Hill from The West Wing.
Yes.
Which, where he played Charlie for, I believe, the entire run of the show. So, like, yes, I am in the Dule camp, having, however, as mentioned, never seen his work on Psych.
I know, and that's really what, I mean, other than West Wing, that's what I knew him from. And Psych was just such a big thing, because it's a show that ran for, in a... unreasonable amount of time for a comedy, especially an hour-long comedy that a lot of people haven't seen because it was on USA.
That's right.
Yeah. But I guess we'll play mine with Maggie, and she actually puts on my glasses and does a POV of me.
Glad to be back. It's like a little reunion. We obviously miss Tim, but we're having so much fun. Comic-Con is always so kind to us.
Yes, and I see that Corbin has the pineapple. Are there any other hidden pineapples here today?
That is a good question. You know what? Ask Dule.
Ooh, Dule knows about the pineapple.
Pineapple somewhere. I'll let you free. Never mind.
I was like, that sounds dirty, but it's okay.
Everything Dule says sounds dirty, so I feel okay saying that.
Well, so this is a Christmas special, and it was brought back, like everything else, because we all love you guys. How does that feel?
That's really sweet, and it's true.
This is why Constantine will be back, guys.
Because we just won't leave them alone.
Like, no.
You guys have been so supportive.
I won't let it die.
Not only of our show, but even, like, our projects outside of Psych, whether it's a foundation, whether it's a play or a new show that we're doing, like, it is the most loyal, devoted group of fans, and we are so grateful. And so, and the reason they're the reason that this movie is getting made.
Well, awesome. And your psychos are loyal. I know I'm one myself. Can you tell us anything about Juliet's story for this movie?
I can't say much, unfortunately, but there's a lot of running in heels, so that'll be familiar. I think that, like, Sean and Juliet's relationship is progressing.
And they used to date, so this will be interesting.
I feel like I'm learning quite a bit about the Psych mythology. Yeah. The other thing that I'm noticing as we watch some of these interviews is if you're not nestled firmly in a fandom, any questions or conversations about that fandom tend to sound like total crazy talk.
Yeah, you're like, oh, psychos, pineapple, like, these aren't even real words.
Who's ever heard of a pineapple?
Yeah, not a real thing.
I'm really hung up on these glasses, though.
I know, I should have brought them today.
Second Snapchat. It's pretty cool.
On the phone? You mean on the glasses?
Yeah. I know.
So if I put these on, what do I hit?
You just hit, there's a button right here, and you hit it.
I don't feel, I feel it.
Yeah, and then it'll start to take a snap. Like, you're snapping.
Comic-Con is fun, guys.
Snapchat. I don't know about Snap, but, like,
and
I know
apparently
it's a big deal,
the
but,
cast of Psych brought secret pineapples to Comic-Con right on their socks.
Corbin Burnson is wearing a hat. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
So, yeah, we'll go to Corbin Burnson, who I actually got to interview before this at the AfterBuzz studio, where we are right now, guys, for Powerless. R.I.P.
Oh, yeah, look at this pineapple hat.
And see, he was also on American Gods. We talk about that a little bit.
That's right. You know what I keep thinking about, too? And I've been in press rooms before, and I've done some of these interviews, and everybody that I've talked to has always been very gracious, very courteous. But, like, being on the other side of it and being asked a series of questions by rotating press personnel, And all the questions are variations on, like, tell us, everybody loves you so much. What is it like to be as loved as you are? I mean, that's got to be incredibly validating.
Yeah. And that's what we're here for, is to validate. I mean, this is what I'm here for, is to validate myself.
Lucretia, how does it feel to be as universally beloved as you are?
I feel so humbled and grateful.
What is it like bearing the burden of being a national treasure?
Yeah, Ian McShane. Oh, Deadwood. It might be coming back.
Speaking of comic book related news where Ian McShane is concerned, did you see the story how, of course, they're rebooting Hellboy as a movie with David Harbour?
Mm-hmm.
They apparently just added Ian McShane to the cast as Professor Broom.
Yes, and what news is that? Because he just finished that awesome run on this season of American Gods.
Where he was Mr. Wednesday, and he was so dang good.
And then Deadwood. And there's talk of bringing that back.
Apparently, Milch, David Milch, who's the creator of Deadwood and the showrunner, has turned in a script to HBO that they're very happy with. So now apparently it's a question of scheduling and how do we get everybody back and when and what's everything going to cost, because of course those sets were crazy expensive and no longer exist. But then I'm going like, we'll just wait for Westworld to wrap for a season and go use
and
those
just
sets.
Use their sets. I don't think Westworld takes that long to film. I mean, you know, a lot of those cable shows, they're there for a couple weeks and then they're done.
And it's the same. Know, it's an HBO joint, so like, why not? But yeah, so Deadwood is not super comic booky, but it's really exciting that Deadwood might return even for a one-off movie to conclude the thing. But yeah, we're going to see Ian McShane in the next Hellboy movie as well, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I love Hellboy. I'm glad that they're bringing it back because it's a fun story.
There's a part of me, of course, at first when they announced that we're bringing Hellboy back, but we're not bringing back Guillermo del Toro, Ron Perlman. I think like a lot of people, I was bummed. And then I keep hearing stuff about what they're doing with this new version, you know, whether it's getting David Harbour to play Hellboy, whether it's like, okay, we're going to do like a hard R. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be gritty. He's going to be just like demon punching everybody in the face and their heads are going to explode. And then we have Ian McShane. And I'm like, oh, well, can
you,
I give you
had me at head explodes,
like, can I give you my money right now? Is that, I know like you guys are maybe haven't even started shooting yet, but I'll give you $20 right now.
Yeah. I would say that's a fair price.
Yeah.
To have more Hellboy.
Yeah.
But speaking of another comics-related thing, here in Los Angeles, you can actually see a new exhibit about Wonder Woman. A lot of props from the movie are now at the WB Studios, and part of the studio tour. They just unveiled a new exhibit on Monday. And I have the press conference here, which is pretty cool. I was there. I live-streamed it if you want to find it on my Twitter later, or you can look at it on here. But, yeah, I also got a special Wonder Woman cookie.
Yes, I saw the Wonder Woman cookie on Instagram.
I was very proud of that.
It's cool. Yeah, I've done the Warner Brothers studio tour. I've actually done it a couple of times.
See, I've never done it. So, like, I was like, oh, this is cool.
It is. Yeah. It's actually really cool. And it doesn't... The first time I did it because I was fairly new to L.A. And I just want... I was looking for stuff to do. And I was like, well, I'll do this. I feel a little bit... as a film fan, sometimes I feel a little bit jaded because I'm like, it's cool to see the stuff, but like, what are they going to show me that doesn't feel super cheesy and touristy?
Yeah.
Nobody's paying me to plug this tour. If you're going to take one studio tour in town, I would say probably take Warner's, because yes, some of it's a little bit touristy, but you get to see a lot of legitimately cool stuff, especially if you're a nerd like we are. You get to see a lot of props and a lot of costumes and different bits of paraphernalia from a lot of the big superhero movies of the past decade now, and it's great. You get to, I don't know where the Wonder Woman exhibit was, but I know for a long time they had all of the Batman stuff in that one two-story building where you could walk around and you'd see like all of the costumes, all of the props, some really cool different weapons and things from not just the Dark Knight movies, but also going all the way back to Burton's and Schumacher's as well.
I believe those are all still there. This was actually in the smaller theater where they had the Suicide Squad exhibit. There's still the Batman v Superman stuff in that particular theater, but Wonder Woman has been added over the Suicide Squad, which had been there before. Because Mike Kalinowski from DC Movie News here was also there with me, and he was saying he'd been there for Suicide Squad, and that just seemed what they did, is they just replaced that, which, as they should.
Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, let's get to the press conference now. Yeah, these were the stunt women for Gal Gadot and Robin Wright.
Oh, and there's Lucy Davis.
Yes, she was there, and then the chief himself. It's pretty interesting.
I would have to say the tiaras, and for two reasons. First, because I kind of feel like it's changed the perception of a tiara. It's kind of gone from something that represented wealth and power for princesses to a symbol of like unity and strength and for these warrior women. And it wasn't only for the queen, it was for every woman on the island. And secondly, because I can see it resonated with the young generation. When I walk around, I see so many little girls wearing the tiaras. I don't even have one. I'm like jealous of them. But I just love that it stayed with them and they wear it with such power now and they're proud. They're not, you know, dancing around in fairy tales with it. They're standing proud and they see it as important for the way they carry themselves.
Yeah, and that's Samantha Jo.
I would have
to
say my most memorable one was probably the shield slide going through fighting the Germans. So I like, it's a slow motion shot in the film of me just laying on the shield and just sliding across the floor. And it was just, after like doing it, of course, it's like different from seeing it. And then after seeing it, it's just, it was such like an elegant move for her and, you know, embracing Wonder Woman.
Yeah, and that Caitlin Deschelle was her stunt double. And you just look at these beautiful stunt women like Caitlin, and then Michelle Facinello was Robin Wright's. And you're like, man, that kicks ass. Like, how can you say it any other way?
And in a way, what's cool is like you don't see the work that the stunt people are doing. Or hopefully, I mean, in the final product, you hope that the effect is so seamless that you completely buy that it is just, and not even Gal Gadot, but that it is Diana of Themyscira doing all of these things. And you don't consider the fact that, yes, of course, Gal Gadot is your lead actress. She is the one who's bringing that character to life. But every single one of these stunt women who are contributing to these sequences, in a way, they're also playing Wonder Woman. So I really like, you know, obviously when they get an opportunity to be spoken to and get to talk about their work and their craft and what they bring to it. Because stunt people, you forget because the effect is meant to be seamless. Stunt people are some of the hardest working people in entertainment. And I feel, yes, there are some people that recognize this as such, but most people, I don't think about it all that actively. So any opportunity to give stunt people a platform to talk about how vital their contributions are, especially to a movie like Wonder Woman, really cool. And like I said, every one of those stunt women played Wonder Woman. They are just as much a part of the end result that you see on screen as anyone else.
Yeah, and as they put it, every little girl now is wearing these tiaras, and not to be a princess, but to be empowered, as with all of them. I mean, that's what Samantha said, and that's so great, because it's so happy for girls to be this kind of princess versus the, oh, come save me in the tower kind of princess.
Yeah.
It really shows how far we've come.
And you see now, I feel like every other day you see these genuinely, this like heartwarming clips of a little girl getting to meet Gal Gadot, and they'll be wearing the costume, and you can see how much it means to these little girls that they have. Like, yes, we've had Princess Leia before, and yes, we've had Ripley before, but there's only one Wonder Woman, and the fact that now this character can be for little girls, and little boys too, why not?
Yeah.
Could be what Batman has been for so many of us, or what Superman has been for so many of us. Like, we don't have to hit it too hard on this show, because I think it's now being talked about plenty of places, but yes, representation matters a great deal. So the fact that little girls, little boys, anybody has a Wonder Woman to look up to now, you can see that movie when you're pretty young, and you can feel inspired, and you can feel like you want to be the best version of yourself because she shows you how.
Yeah, because I think the thing about Wonder Woman, and especially the movie that it really taught, was more egalitarianism than anything. And that's why Wonder Woman is a symbol for both women and men. And that everybody can look up to her because of what she represents. And it's not just about representing strong women. It's about, you know, representing peace and inner strength. And those are universal.
Absolutely.
And the thing is Wonder Woman has existed for 75 years, but this is the first time we've had a big screen Wonder Woman run film.
And we've talked a little bit about how, on the one hand, it's a shame and bizarre that it took this long, but if we had to wait this long to get this Wonder Woman movie, it feels worth it.
Well, and two, when you think about it, this isn't the first female comic book movie, but it's the first one to surpass all of the male ones coming out this year, which is great. But at the same time, it's not because she's a woman. It's because it's a good movie. And yes, I mean, we've had some faults before, but just like any other comic book, I know people will point out like the lack of success of like Elektra and Catwoman and things like that. And it's like, no, those were just bad movies. It wasn't because it was a female comic book hero. I mean, yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And two, I think, I mean, to your point, we're seeing now Wonder Woman, I think as of today, as of this recording, the best, what's the phrasing, like the strongest holding superhero movie, I think maybe ever, as far as its legs at the box office, how it's almost every superhero movie, it's like everybody who's really excited to go, most people go the first week, which is why even the superhero movies that make a ton of money are very well received. You tend to see a pretty big drop off in audience from the first week, even to the second week. Wonder Woman is holding incredibly well and has been holding incredibly well since it came out a couple of months ago. It's not an accident. There's really no mystery as to why that is. It's a great movie, and it's giving people something. Well, I was going to say giving people something they didn't know they needed. That's not true. Giving people something they knew for a fact they needed desperately and probably started to feel like they weren't going to get regardless. So, yeah, I mean, I'll sing this movie's praises for the rest of the day, but I'm sure there are other things we could talk about.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, is what hasn't been said about Wonder Woman, but we haven't explained this stuff here.
That's right, we've got some paraphernalia of our own here.
Yes, right in front of us, and this will now be in front of us for every other episode, because Skybound Entertainment has generously donated a Lucille, a bloody Lucille, which one of us is definitely going to get hit with that later.
It's me, isn't it? You're going to hit me with the bat. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, eeny, meeny, miny. Mo.
It's like you're just gesturing to me over and over and over. I see where this is going.
But yes, thank you guys so much. This will greatly amuse me, and now our space isn't so bare.
At least the barbed wire is not actual barbed wire, so when you hit me, it'll hurt less?
Yeah, it'll be kind of like playing, you know, wrestling. Like back when they had like ECW and they would do the barbed wire bats. Yeah, yeah. They weren't real barbed wire.
Yikes. Okay, but we've got this really sweet, it's a 34-inch Lucille, so I believe it's actual size.
Yeah, of a real baseball bat.
So you can play Negan and kill your friends in a fun round robin until you have no friends left.
Yeah.
But we have something else on the table as well.
I know you guys, I teased it in the teaser, but we are going to unbox the newest Mega Box, which has some pretty cool Skybound exclusives.
What do we got? Oh,
Let's see.
A little Scully cap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there we go.
What's got in there?
Force hat.
All right.
Which is their exclusive. Yeah, and if we could play the video there while we're doing the... let's cue that up so we can explain what the Shiva Force is. This is a not safe for work video, guys, but it's fun.
Danger lurks around every corner, but nothing's more treacherous, more vile than Negan.
Eeny, meeny, miny.
I love that it's a
Negan,
little girl.
You monster! Have no fear, where darkness takes shape. Only one team has the courage to stand up and fight. Friends, we need your help. This looks like a job for Shiva Force.
Shiva, of course, Shiva being Ezekiel's tiger.
And her friends, Rick Grimes, the commander, Michonne, the samurai, and Shiva's most trusted advisor, Ezekiel, the sensei. Shiva Force, attack, take that. Smash him. Batter up. Watch out, guys. I got you in my sight, Shiva. Shiva, look out. Radical. Jesus, the ninja. A Mega Boss exclusive. Shiva, finish this. Negan.
So what I find...
Of course, this ain't over yet. I'll be back with
they're swearing.
Yeah.
That's fun.
I know. A little
so, but what I'm wondering now as we're watching this video...
You strike,
They'll be stopped by...
As of today, we're about to begin season 8 of The Walking Dead, I believe. How many years do you think Walking Dead has to run before they start doing really goofy gimmick episodes? Like, for example, an all-action figure episode.
You know... Supernatural, it only took a few seasons. So I'm like, Walking Dead, why are you not on that train? I mean, this will be their 13th season on Supernatural, and they're doing a Scooby-Doo episode. So we need an all, like, action figure. And I love that really mocked a lot of the G.I. Joe. And their whole packaging, which this is that Jesus exclusive figure, designed like G.I. Joe. And this just brings back such great memories. And this is not the Jesus action figure that I had as a kid. That one was purchased at the Scroll. But I think I like this Jesus.
Oh, this is sweet. And I do. Like, I'm really into the retro packaging on this as well. Because, like, yeah, I was not quite as big into buying action figures when I was younger, if only because I had a box of like the old Kenner Star Wars toys that my uncle gave me at one point. So I had that and a bunch of old G.I. Joes. So like I'd get action figures every so often, but I had so many in this box that it almost felt unnecessary. But every time I would go and I would get one, the packaging is obviously the first thing that you notice. And this gives me like really weird, super specific flashbacks to getting the toys that I would get as a little kid, which is fun.
Yeah, that's how my little brother learned math, was the Star Wars guys versus the G.I. Joes. And then we also have, much like my keychain, which they had in the first Mega Box, but this is a ballpoint pen.
That's cool.
No one's going to fuck with this guy.
That's super cool. Nice. Look at how fine this is.
I know, and I'm like, it's a good pen. That was one of those that you, like, lock, you know, you pull in, put in your little, like, pocket there.
Can sign those checks with Lucille.
Yeah, no one's going to mess with you at the bank. But, oh, yeah, just to complete the Shiva Force, there's this lovely bright orange shirt.
Oh, look at that. It's kind of like a bit of a Legends of the Hidden Temple vibe to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I feel like I need to put together a little monkey. That really isn't that hard to put together. I did that at VidCon last year, and I would have won that game.
Oh, that's right. Like, the kids that kept getting knocked out because they couldn't figure out how to put, like, the three-piece monkey statue together.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's like, seriously? It's a monkey.
Cool.
And then, of course, you always get a pin, and no matter what box you order, and completing the Shiva Force. And I do believe we do have some variances. They're always very good with their variant covers in these, and which I'm very excited because the one that reminds me the most of home, because it's also based in East Texas, Redneck Number 1, the variant cover.
Nice.
Which is pretty cool because I only have the digital copy.
Cool. Yeah. Have you checked out this book? You have, right? You've checked this book out. We did. We talked about it on the show at one point.
Yeah,
that's
why
I was like, I read this. I liked it. When did I read this?
When did that happen?
It was for this very program. Yeah. No, this is a cool book. Yeah. And obviously, like, this is a sweet looking, it's a gnarly looking variant cover. Seems to be feasting on some flesh here. So, you know, you give it to your grandma and you can bond over some flesh eating.
Yes. And speaking of flesh eating, because I'm pretty sure that's what Minotaurs do. I've yet to read this book, but it's the first issue of Kill the Minotaur, a variant cover as well, which is another good Skybound title that I think if you like American Gods is what I've heard, that book will be a good fit for you.
Then I think this is for me then.
Yeah. But we have to wrap, guys, and that is all that is in your mega box. See there? So that was what was in the box. As always, I'm Lucretia Lyons. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one. And you can always hit that little thumbs up there while you're on YouTube watching this, or if you're on iTunes, just put a little fancy review there. 5 stars, we like those. That's how Lex lives.
Yes, this bit that just won't go away. Yep, that is indeed. I do. I need those 5-star validating reviews, or I will literally wither away. It'll be like the end of Harry Potter, 8, where Voldemort flakes into paper and floats away on the wind. That's what's going to happen. But in the meantime, please like us, subscribe. 5 stars are awesome. Also follow our personal social media accounts. Obviously, you know where to find Lucretia. I am all over social media at the Lex Michael, and I have a hat now, so it was a good day.
I know. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us. We'll see you next week. Speed off!
From managing editor Jason Squamata, executive producers Maria Menounos, Phil Svitek, and Kevin Undergaro, We would like to thank you for tuning in to Book Circle Online. For more discussion, go to bookcircleonline.com. And if you have comments, questions, or book title suggestions, write us at info@bookcircleonline.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this is Book Circle Online. BCO, join the circle.